Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
The brains of Newton, Einstein, and Mozart were certainly some of the most magnificent in human history. And although they can't be officially diagnosed posthumously, many people have speculated all three of them might have been placed on the autism spectrum if they were alive today. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Temple Grandin understands the challenges of a world set up for more typical kinds of brains, but she also knows that her autism helps her think in innovative ways, and that's helped her develop improvements to livestock handling that have changed the cattle industry. She believes we should support early, sustained educational therapy for kids with autism, not to cure them, but to empower them to lead lives that are satisfying and productive. Temple Grandin is professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University, and she's an advocate and spokesperson for people with autism. Her books include The Way I See It, Thinking in Pictures, and The Autistic Brain. Temple, welcome back to Think.
It's great to be here.
Your mom sounds like a force of nature.
She knew just how much to push me. You've got to stretch these kids. You don't chuck them in the deep end of the pool, but you've got to stretch. One thing that helped me in the 50s, kids were taught social rules in a much more rigid manner, in a much more systematic manner. My ability in art was always encouraged. And in my book, The Autistic Brain, I talk about the visual thinking mind, which is my kind of mind, thinks in pictures, the artist mind, the industrial designer mind. Another kind of thinker is the mathematical, more pattern thinking mind. And a third type is the word thinking mind. We need to be building on the kid's strength. And I think Einstein would be labeled with autistic today. No speech until age three.
That's extraordinary. Can you talk about what it's like to think in pictures?
Well, as I think about things, and you asked me things about it, I start to see images. You said you want to play a scene from the movie. I saw the cover of the DVD cover. I think in pictures. Everything I think about, it comes up like a series of slides. I think maybe the best way to understand thinking in pictures is for you to give me a key word, but make it something original, not something boring like house or car.
Okay.
Give me something original.
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga. I saw rhubarb in our backyard when I was a child. And now I'm seeing some really delicious apple pie, because now I'm in the pie category. I'm seeing some other good desserts now that I've had. But these things come up as a series of pictures. Now I'm seeing some chocolate bars that were given to me at the autism meeting I was just at.
So it just goes that quickly for you.
It's associative. It's associative. It isn't random, but it has a logic to it. And this kind of thinking also is important in creativity. I'm very concerned in our school systems today that we've taken out all the hands-on classes, cooking, sewing, artwork, music, woodworking. And I recently read an interesting journal article that Nobel Prize winners were 50% more likely to have a hobby like music or art, or maybe building things, than just regular scientists in the science association.
You still do art today?
I'm not much today, but I'm pretty much just riding the airplane doing talks, because I want to see kids that are quirky and different get out and be successful. I've designed a lot of things in the livestock industry. I've worked with a lot of welders and millwrights that were either dyslexic, ADHD, probably on the autism spectrum. One was a really bad stutterer. And I'm seeing a lot of problems with these kids that get a label, especially the fully verbal smart ones. They're not learning working skills. When I was 13, mother got me a little sewing job. When I was 15, I was cleaning horse stalls every day and taking care of the horse barn. And then I was painting signs and selling signs. And that then morphed into my livestock business. I had good internships when I was in college. One at a research lab. Another one is an aide for autistic kids. These kids got to learn how to work.
Did you ever resent your mother for pushing you?
I thank her now.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really thank her now. But she had a really good sense of just how much to stretch. You don't chuck them in the deep end of the pool. I just talked to a lady this afternoon who's on the spectrum, and she got thrown into a chaotic clothing store during the Christmas rush.
Oh, goodness.
No, that's not going to work. You know, let's pick something quieter first.
The work that you've done in the livestock industry is very interesting. What you have really challenged the industry to do is to make the experience before slaughter less stressful for animals. Am I characterizing that correctly?
That's correct. And when I first started out in the 70s, being a woman in a man's world was really, really difficult. And one of the first questions I had to ask is, do the cattle know they're going to get slaughtered? I found they behaved the same way walking up the ramp at the slaughterhouse as they did going in to shoot for vaccinations. And something as little as a paper towel waving on a dispenser in a slaughterhouse could make the animals stop. And then I started my business one small freelance job at a time. And then I would write about it, you know, and slowly work up and build up that business.
You've talked about the fact that a primary emotion for you is fear. And so when things don't seem right, you can go to anxiety, even if you know intellectually that you're okay. And that helped you relate to animals that sometimes, if things seem amiss, we'll be afraid.
Well, cattle's a prey species animal. They get scared easily. When I got into puberty, I started having horrendous problems with anxiety. I discuss this in detail in my book, Thinking in Pictures. I also discuss successful use of a low dose of an antidepressant medication. And I'm a visual thinker, and I know other visual thinkers, designers that I have worked with professionally, where a little bit of Prozac really made a difference. And you have to be very careful with these antidepressants not to give too high a dose. Too high a dose will cause agitation and insomnia. And even though Thinking in Pictures book is now 20 years old, that information is still accurate.
So it took you a while to get to the dose that worked for you.
Well, I was lucky. Actually, I'm taking an ancient old drug, and I'd read an article on endogenous anxiety, and I just took the starter dose, and that worked. Brain scans have since confirmed that my fear center, the amygdala, was 3 times larger than normal.
Wow.
Now, I want to make it very clear that's not true for everybody with autism. The problem with autism is you're going from Einstein, Silicon Valley, probably Edison, he was described as a hyperactive high school dropout, to somebody who never learns to dress themselves. And it's all got the same label. So there's way too much overgeneralization.
Have you ever thought, and I mean this seriously, doing as much traveling as you do, have you ever thought about ways we could redesign airplanes and the way we put human beings on airplanes?
Well, we saw a demonstration United Airlines, that's not how we handle passengers.
The gentleman who was forcibly ejected.
Dragged off. In fact, in the meat industry, if you dragged a downed pig in the way that man was dragged, your plant would be shut down for a week by the USDA. You absolutely would not be allowed to, you're not allowed to drag down animals. And the way they dragged that passenger, I mean, it's absolutely horrible. I don't know what they were thinking of.
Do meat producers care about this because there's an economic motivation? People don't want to buy animals that have been abused, or do they care because it's the right thing to do?
Well, there's some people that definitely do care. But one of the things that made the biggest change was when a large customer, such as McDonald's and Wendy's, started enforcing standards. And I developed a very simple scoring system. Instead of getting into a whole bunch of elaborate stuff telling them how to build a plant, outcome variables. If you have more than 3 cattle mooing and bellowing during handling, you're going to fail the audit. No more than 1% of the animals falling down, kind of like traffic rules. Very, very simple, very straightforward. And enforcing that, when large customers enforce that, that made a huge difference. There's 2 parts of a problem in many different things. When I first started out, I thought I could fix everything with equipment. Everything, fix it with equipment. I believed that for 10 years. The other half is management. You've got to manage things. And I don't care if it's something to do with livestock or it's a school. People came and said, oh, we're going to fix all the schools by putting them on the internet. That didn't fix the schools. What makes the schools work is a good teaching. That's the management side.
And that's more challenging.
People always want the thing more than they want the management. Because good management is paying attention to a whole lot of small details. I have found in my work with livestock handling, I'm constantly having to take the distractions out. The coat on the fence, the paper towel that's hanging down, the hose across the alleyway. Because most people don't see it. When I first started out as a visual thinker, it's obvious to me to look at what cattle were seeing. I didn't know that other people weren't visual thinkers. I thought everybody was a visual thinker. I didn't know that my thinking was different. And then I started learning more about it. Discuss that in my book, The Autistic Brain. Learn that there's a mathematical pattern thinker. Then there's more of a word thinker. And I'm getting concerned that our educational system is screening out the visual thinkers. Visual thinkers can't do algebra. And I'm seeing too many kids that can't do algebra and they can't graduate from the community college. And they're not learning the old-fashioned practical math, like figuring out how much carpet you'd need, you know, for a room, something like that. I was lucky. How did I get out of algebra? In 66 and 67, when I was a freshman in college, the required class nationally was finite math, which had probability, matrices, and statistics. And with some tutoring, I was able to do that. I would have been sunk if I'd had to take advanced algebra. It's just so abstract, it doesn't make any sense to me. Now, there's other people that can't do algebra, but they can do geometry. I'm not suggesting, you know, no math requirement at all, but we're screening out too many good people. Well, I'll give you some reasons why we need visual thinkers. Let's prevent a mess like Fukushima. That was a visual thinking mistake.
How is that?
I'll tell you. It's a visual thinking mistake so basic and so simple, I can't believe that they did it. I can't design a nuclear reactor. I wouldn't even want to try to design it. But it's not a very good idea, when you live next to the sea, to put that super important emergency cooling pump with its electric motor and electric generators in a non-waterproof basement. Simple, watertight doors, and it would not have happened.
Do you walk through the world seeing mistakes that people are making or potential catastrophes because you see, you think through vision?
Well, I was just walking by the construction project next to this station, and they an awful lot of holes drilled in some support columns to hold some cables for the parking lot. That attracted my attention.
Now I'm going to have to worry about that every time.
Well, they didn't drill the holes in the tower. They didn't drill the holes in the support column for the tower. It was just on like the 3 or 4 story parking garage. But I questioned drilling that many holes in a support column. I saw that. I'd want to look into that. Did they calculate, the mathematicians calculate out the strength of that column after you drilled like 8 holes in it, big holes?
How do you know you're connecting with your students?
Well, I have students come up to me and tell me they learned a lot in their class. There's a lot of skills I want to teach students in my class. I want to teach them something about animal behavior, but I also have them do a drawing assignment. And I'm finding the students are having a harder and harder time doing the drawing assignment because kids are going through school now. They don't use protractors and compasses anymore. I had one girl that bought a Boy Scout compass, and she could only draw one size of circle. We have to have more tutorials on using the scale ruler. The other thing I have them do, I call it my internet project. They can pick out any subject they want, animal behavior, but it has to be really narrow. And they've got to give me journal article abstracts off of 4 different databases. And I want them to learn how to use the citations, learn how to dig online, Google Scholar, PubMed, ScienceDirect, and the Web of Science, and learn these databases and how to use them.
Have you loved the internet since it's been part of your life?
Yep, and I have found on the internet, when it comes to looking things up, my ability in the paper library went right over to the internet. People are not creative about keywords, I explained to my students. Cattle has 6 different names. Cow, bull, heifers, steers, calf, and calves. And sometimes you have to use all 6 of those different names on separate searches, or you won't find things.
What's the generic term for cat, like a male and a female? Is there one word that is singular?
A group of them is cattle. And that could be bulls, steers, or cows.
But you don't say a cattle. You have to either say a cow
Okay. You would say a cow or a bull or a steer.
All right. My guest is Temple Grandin, Colorado State University professor of animal sciences, autism advocate, and spokesperson. Her books include Thinking in Pictures, The Autistic Brain, and The Way I See It. We'll resume our conversation in just a minute. You can call us at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org, or you can find us on Twitter at KERA Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where students can pursue their passion. You can study social justice and build activism skills with summer courses like education, equality, and human rights. You can apply now at smu.edu/MLS.
Temple, when animals and people die, they stay with us in our minds. We can still see them. So I think it would be best not to remember Chestnut like this. Okay?
I see Chestnut the day I arrived. I see grooming Chestnut. I see a picture of a horse just like Chestnut in a book. You pass a Chestnut horse in Route 119 near a feed store. There was one in a calendar at Ann Ann's. There was one in Life magazine opposite the page of Mr. Kennedy.
Okay. Can you bring everything you've seen to your mind?
Sure.
Even if it were an everyday object like, say, shoes?
I see all the shoes I've worn, and my mother's, and other people I've met, and you have three pairs. One is a new heel, and then she's in newspaper ads and TV ads. And...
Wow.
Can't you?
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Temple Grandin. You just heard a scene from the 2010 HBO biopic on Temple Grandin. That was Claire Danes portraying her. Is it surreal? Was it surreal to see someone living your life on screen?
They did a great job on that movie, and they showed my visual thinking really, really accurately, because the way the pictures come up, they come up as still pictures. And if I hold one of those slides, then I'll get a brief video clip, and I'll also get sound and touch and other senses along with it. It was just kind of surreal watching Claire Danes be me. It was sort of like going in the 60s and 70s time machine. They did a great job with that. I also liked the fact that they showed my projects accurately. The squeeze machine, the optical illusion room I'd worked on, the gate I had worked on, because I'm really, really interested in career stuff. I'm seeing too many smart kids on the spectrum aren't learning working skills and not getting into an interesting career.
What did it take for your mom to find you schools that could recognize your intelligence and also work with the ways that you struggled socially?
Well, autism diagnosis has changed over the years. You used to have to have speech delay to get an autism diagnosis. The Asperger diagnosis didn't exist when I was a child, where social awkwardness with no speech delay. Severe speech delay, I fortunately got into very good early educational intervention that my mother found through a doctor at Boston Children's Hospital that did a lot of the same kind of stuff that's done in programs today. And fortunately, they had enough money to send me to a small elementary school. Elementary school worked pretty well. My ability in art was always encouraged. I was encouraged to do lots of different kinds of art. In the 50s, social skills were taught in a much more concrete way. Like if I stirred my drink with my finger, instead of screaming no, she'd say use the spoon. High school was a disaster. Regular big high school disaster. I was bullied and teased. Hmm. And I ended up getting kicked out of this high school for throwing a social studies book at a girl. And I beamed her on the head. And I went to a school for... basically for autistic kids that was on a farm. And for the first 3 years I was there, I didn't do very much studying, but I cleaned a lot of horse stalls. And I think that Mr. Patey, the headmaster, realized I was learning how to work. I also had to learn how to be on time. Even though I didn't study, I had to attend class, had to attend meals, had to attend chapel. And then in the last year, my science teacher came on the scene, got me interested in science. And then I turned it around and I started studying. So mentors are extremely important.
You are not socially awkward today. You have spent a lifetime learning the rules that make other people comfortable. I wonder if you sometimes wish the rest of the world would make you comfortable and follow your rules.
Well, you learn, and you learn by specific example. You see, I'm a bottom-up thinker. And I've been reading interesting stuff about artificial intelligence, and I'm finding out that these artificial intelligence programs also are bottom-up thinkers, like a program that learns how to diagnose melanoma. You show it thousands of pictures that have melanoma, thousands of pictures that don't have it, and then it can figure out the new cases. You see, concepts are learned with specific examples, and a person on the spectrum can keep learning as you add information to the database. But if they end up holed up in the basement playing video games... then they don't develop. We've got to get them out doing things. Mother kind of, she knew just how hard to push. Don't chuck them in the deep end of the pool, but she'd always had a good sense on stretching me.
You were a fan of TV and movies when you were a kid.
Absolutely.
What did you like to watch?
Oh, I loved Star Trek. Loved that. And when I was a real little kid, it was the Howdy Doody show, mm-hmm. The early 50s, the Mickey Mouse Club. I loved the Lone Ranger. I was just down in Fort Worth in the stockyards and found the Lone Ranger star down there.
I have to ask you about your spectacular collection of Western shirts. Everyone who can picture you probably picked, even if they don't think in pictures, they think of Temple Grandin in a gorgeous Western shirt. How did you decide this would be your, for lack of a better word, your uniform?
It just sort of happened. And early on, three of the best shirts I got came out of the Calgary airport, of all places.
Like in the airport gift shop.
Yep, and I bought one yesterday down at the stockyards, mm-hmm. and I've had them given to me. Now, I've got a shirt on right now that I wore this morning at an autism talk that's got the yellow rose of Texas on it. Got it on right now.
How many do you have?
Well, I got enough to fill up about 5 feet of racks. And I just keep, you know, trading them around.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org, and we're on Twitter at @KERAThink. Debbie is calling now from Dallas. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
At first, I wanted to thank Ms. Grandin for all she's done for the autism community and to just encourage her to keep doing it. It's been wonderful. I have a 19-year-old son with Asperger's syndrome, and my question is, you know, you talked about your mom knew exactly how much to push you, and he's been known to use the excuse of his diagnosis to not be able
not
to do
excuse.
Things. Yes, and so I have a hard time gauging how accurate he's being in his self-awareness and how much to push him.
Well, I have to get more information. One of the problems is overgeneralizing. He's 19 years old, Asperger's, so I'm going to assume normal reading level, normal speech.
Higher than average intelligence. He does go to community college, and he has a part-time job with supported employment.
And how's he doing at the community college?
He's doing really well. I guess the times he resists is when I push him to do social things.
And what kind of some of these kids need to go out and get a job in a retail store, but not during the chaotic Christmas rush. There's a book called Smile and Succeed for Teens. It's for training kids how to work in retail stores. They got a nice, quiet retail store. You're going to have to learn how to sell. These are the sort of things that you just learn how to do. What's his strong area in college?
He likes science.
Like science. But the biggest problem I'm finding with these kids is they're simply not learning how to work. This is one of the biggest problems. What supported employment is he doing?
He is working in a retail store at a Dick's Sporting Goods.
So good.
He is getting some experience, yes.
And he's doing well doing that?
Yes.
Good. Good. And I think the more he does it, he's going to get more and more comfortable doing that. You have to learn by doing, and hopefully he has a manager at this store that will coach him. So if he follows customers around the store too much, then the manager needs to explain to him, approach the customer twice, and if the customer's not interested, then back off. You have to just give them very clear instructions on what to do and what not to do, just done in a really calm manner.
You were, at the beginning of this year, you were inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. And people like Madeleine Albright and Sally Ride and Rosa Parks are there. You've talked about starting your career in a very male-dominated profession. You're still in a male-dominated profession. Do you see yourself as a trailblazer?
It was very hard. In the beginning, when I started in Arizona, the only women working in the large cattle feed yards were in the office. I was the first woman working out in feed yards. Now there's lots of women working in them, lots of women going into it. But that wasn't the case when I started. And there's that scene in the movie where they put bull testicles on my vehicle. That happened.
Goodness.
That actually happened. And the people that were bad to me weren't the owners. It was that layer of management at the foreman level.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the ones did the really bad things. Now, one of the things that motivated me is I wanted to prove that I could do it, that I was not stupid. Another thing I figured out very early in my career is that certain people could open the door to opportunity. And when I did the dipping vat projects that were shown in the movie, when the manager of the feed yard came up to me and asked me, I said, give me 3 weeks, because I was only at the 60% level of knowledge, and I knew I had to get a whole bunch of drawings on the concrete reinforcement. But I went through the door, and a lot of women are chicken to go through the door unless they're at the 90% level. Sheryl Sandberg wrote about that in her book, Lean In. The door to opportunity only opens for about 5 seconds. When it opens, you got to walk through it.
You do seem confident that you know what you know and you know what you don't know.
Well, you keep learning. You see, I'm a bottom-up thinker. So as information gets added to the database, then I adjust opinions and about different things.
What do you do when you're just furious?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really want to say what I do. There's probably some bad words, and you'd shut the station down if I said them, so I'm not going to say them.
So not so different at dealing with anger than neurotypical brains.
Yeah, and you have to learn to control it. And one of the reasons I got into trouble when I was in high school with fighting was kids teased me. And they called me retard or tape recorder or some other thing like that. And I reacted with anger. I had to switch from anger to crying. Hmm. And you know, it's okay to cry. We're right here in Texas today. And that's where all the NASA stuff is located. And when they shut the shuttle down, the scientists cried. Yeah, that's why they had those jobs, because they weren't throwing things. It's okay for guys to cry.
How did you realize it was okay to cry and that you could find release?
Basically, the teasing was still horrible, and I still felt miserable. But when I reacted with anger at the boarding school, I still was allowed to clean the horse stalls, but I wasn't allowed to ride the horses.
Hmm. Do you have horses today?
I don't. I'm traveling 85% of the time now doing talks. Do a lot of talks to students, a lot of the things we're talking about right now. And I do a lot of stuff talking about careers. I want to see students get into good careers.
I know you're passionate about that. It's also, it sounds like frankly, a sacrifice of your personal life.
Well, I like the results of the things that I do.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Temple Grandin, Colorado State University professor of animal sciences and an autism advocate and spokesperson. Her books include Thinking in Pictures, The Autistic Brain, and The Way I See It. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. We'll go back to the phones now. Susan is on the line in Arlington. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Okay. My son is also 19, but he has more moderate autism.
Okay.
He's more on an elementary school level with his reading and everything. But I think he really needs to learn money skills is really key,
yes.
But he doesn't seem to understand money no matter how much we work with him.
All right,
he's
now
also in a really...
You got to make the money concrete. When I was a little kid, I got 50 cents for a week for allowance. And I knew exactly what I could buy with it. 5 comics, 10 candy bars. So you've got to get the money, make it concrete. Okay, you have $5, you could buy something from McDonald's, for example. You've got to show how the money converts into real things. And if you don't have enough money, then there's certain real things you can't get. You can't do it in an abstract way.
All right. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also find us on Twitter at KERA Think, or you can email think@kera.org. Next on the phone is Bona in Dallas. Hello, Bona.
Yes, hi. First, I just want to tell you that the main reason I am here in the States is when I saw your movie in 2010. My husband was having an operation here in Cleveland, and I saw the movie. And this year, I knew that my kid is autistic, my girl. I moved directly from Egypt to here because I felt that she is going to, I don't know, she's going to jump this in a way and another after watching the movie.
You thought your daughter would do better if she was educated with autism in the United States. Is that right? After seeing Temple's story.
Definitely. Yes. And I was right. I really did make the best move I have ever. This was the best decision because ever since we came here, she is talking. I mean, she's in a public school. She is socially very well. She didn't talk. Now she's talking. She doesn't stop talking, actually. And she's doing great.
Good.
My main problem or the question is two things. She is a walking calendar. She remembers dates, numbers, anything that happened within like her mind. Even I asked her something that happened when she was 4 years old, which was about 6 or 7 years before, she would remember even the date, like March 13 at 4:30, she went to the doctor or the dentist. Mm-hmm. She's hot, she's amazing. And she remembers numbers in an amazing way. But she is not good at math.
Okay, wait a minute. How old is she?
Half.
Say that again, Bona?
How old is she?
10 and a half.
Not good at math. Now, it depends upon how the math is presented. Sometimes children understand math better if you, there's simple adding and subtraction. I've got, 5 candy bars and I eat 2, I've got 3 left. Or for fractions, I cut the pizza up into fourths or I cut the pizza in half. Helps you to understand. I've got to sort of ask a lot more questions. This brings up another really important thing when I'm troubleshooting and trying to figure out what the problem is, I'm trying to figure out exactly what problem she has with math. There's a tendency to overgeneralize when we're trying to figure out some of these problems.
All right. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Because you are so recognizable, how many times a day are you just, you know, at the grocery store going about your life and someone comes up to you and asks you for advice?
Well, usually I get at least one at the airport, you know, the big airports. Mm-hmm. And people ask me all the time how I feel about that. I feel it's a responsibility because kids look up to me and I want to be a good role model for those kids.
How old were you when you took an interest in what autism was and how it had shaped you?
When I got in my 20s, books were just starting to come out. You got to remember in the 50s, there were no books or anything on this. And then they went through the whole awful stuff in the 60s, blaming parents for it, that it was
the
all
refrigerator
caused.
Mothers.
That's absolute rubbish. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely neurological. See, a brain can be more social, emotional, or a brain can be more thinking. So in the milder forms of autism, it's probably just normal variation. Then you get into much more severe, then it's obviously a disorder. But there's a, you know, there's such a big wide range. And I've been in a lot of brain scan experiments. Those are covered in my autistic brain book. I want to learn more about myself. But the thing I'm concerned about, I'm seeing too many kids where autism is becoming their total identity. You know, my other career interests in design work and livestock is another very important part of my identity.
We've had some questions come up. People want to know more about the squeeze machine. So after the break, we will talk about how that works with Temple Grandin, Colorado State University professor in animal sciences. She's also a spokesperson and advocate for people with autism and author of multiple books, including The Way I See It, Thinking in Pictures, and The Autistic Brain. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program for working adults interested in human-centered leadership. You can take courses this fall like Personhood in the Age of Corporate Enterprise. You can apply now at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Colorado State University Professor of Animal Sciences, Temple Grandin. She's also an autism advocate and spokesperson and author of books including The Way I See It, Thinking in Pictures, and The Autistic Brain. You can join us at 800-933-5372. We've referred to the squeeze machine a couple of times, and people might be thinking, what in the world is Temple Grandin talking about? This is something that makes cattle feel better.
Well, when I went to my aunt's ranch, I noticed that when they put cattle in a squeeze chute for their vaccinations, that sometimes the animals kind of calmed down. When I got into puberty, I had horrendous panic attacks, horrendous. That's now controlled with a very low dose of antidepressant drugs. You have to be very careful not to get the dose too high. You can get agitation and insomnia if you do that, but just the right low dose really works. Talk about that in Thinking in Pictures. So I built a device I could get into that was like a cattle squeeze chute, and I found that helped me calm me down. There are some kids where deep pressure really helps them calm down, and that's what I did, and it was shown really accurately in the movie. Some individuals with sensory issues react well to deep pressure. Others don't. It's not one size fits all.
That's something that seems to be really important to you, that people understand. You know, we talk about the autism spectrum. Spectrum implies a wide variation.
That's
and
right.
Yet we tend to sort of have one category.
Well, this is the problem. I have teachers say to me, what do I do about autistic behavior in the classroom? Well, I don't know. If you got a little kid that's not talking, I can give you a standard answer on early intervention. But once they get a bit older, I have to find out what's going on. Is he getting bullied? Does he have trouble with reading? Is he fidget and run around the classroom? I've got to find out what the problem is. Well, one thing that was taught to me as a young child, really important, turn-taking. Got to learn how to wait and take turns.
That's interesting because a lot of games that we have created for kids now are all about one player and you keep
going.
No,
we've got to be, if you do an electronic game with a kid, I want that phone physically passed around where you take a turn because they got to learn how to inhibit a response and wait while the other people take their turn.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go next to Carol in Wills Point. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm so happy to get to talk to Temple. I just wanted to say is that I read an article about you in a Dallas paper. I hate to even say how long, many years ago. I say a good 30 years ago. And that was that. And I read the story and everything about you. And I happened to be visiting my son in Colorado. And we were on 16th Street Mall, and you were in there talking. And we stayed and listened. And I bought one of the books that was going on, and I met you. And I just want to say what a huge impact. I don't know anyone with autism, but I totally get it now, and it's all because of you.
Well, thank you very much.
You've written about the therapeutic benefits of singing.
Well, singing is on different circuits than speech. So there's some individuals that can learn to sing first. Also, in one of my other books, Animals in Translation, I talk about, well, why does the brain have music? See, animals talk with tone of voice. They convey emotion by tone of voice. That probably is related to music. But there's some kids that can learn to sing when they can't talk, and singing runs on different circuits. Other things that I've heard very helpful, therapeutic riding, combination of rhythm and balancing is helpful. Some kids have done their first words on a horse. Let's get them out doing things.
All of us have things that we wish we could remember that slip our minds, but we also have things that are bad memories that we wish we could forget. Do you have a harder time letting go of bad memories?
Well, some bad memories, like being in a really scary emergency landing in a plane when I was in high school, I can play that now like a movie. But at the time, I was absolutely terrified. We had to go down the emergency chutes. It was not fun.
Goodness. And what do you do with those when they start to replay?
Well,
are you in control?
Actually,
of
it replays right now, but it just replays like a movie. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was scary. And it took me 3 years to get over that. And I'd approached the airport. It was a white-knuckle flyer. And the way I got over it was learning more about aviation, so planes went from scary to interesting.
Because you understood them.
And that's the same way they get people over elevator phobias. They make sure they learn all the mechanism on why it will not fall down the shaft.
You were really interested in flying things as a kid.
Oh, I loved flying things. I've made a little bird kite that flew behind my trike that had little wing tips like a modern jet, and I would experiment and experiment and experiment with it. Kids aren't making things today. We've got to get hands-on things back in the schools. And one of the things you learn from those hands-on things, I had to experiment and experiment and experiment with that kite. And I went back to try to recreate these things as an adult. And I had a bird kite. I actually got it to work. But my disc kite still doesn't work. And I think the reason for that is I can't get the same art paper I had with the right textured surface. So then I started looking into what textured golf balls and why they work. And that changes the aerodynamics. And I can't get my disc kite to work. I can't buy the same paper. You know, the exact method matters. It brings up another thing. Talk about associative thinking. Problems now in biomedical research on replicating experiments. And I think it has to do with the method section. That exact kind of paper matters. And I think every detail. And some of these experiments are not replicating them because they don't do the methods the same. When I review journal articles, I'm the methods police. I go, wait a minute. You didn't tell me what breed of pig you used in that experiment. You've got to tell me that. And a bunch of other real obvious stuff like that. They'll have the statistics all right, but the methods section is too vague.
So when you review something, people know that they have to be on their toes.
Well, you'll have some people, when they review a scientific journal article before it's published, review the math and the statistics. I'll leave that to somebody else. But I go over the methods. I go, wait a minute, you didn't tell me exactly what you did in this experiment. First of all, I don't know what breed of pig you used. I remember this one particular paper. And going back to my kite, I cannot buy that exact same art paper. I made it exactly the same way. It doesn't work. It spins. It doesn't sail. And I think it has to do with the rough surface, because I actually started looking up stuff in aviation on rough surfaces. Like the Dreamliner, for example, has a scalloped exhaust on the engine, and that reduces sound. You see, that's part of the same principles.
So you just get interested in things, and then you just go like a rocket.
Well, and it's associative, and I can see how the golf ball fits in with that. And the golf ball with dimples is actually quieter than one without dimples. The one with dimples travels further. There was a great Mythbusters episode on that.
That's a good show.
I love that show. I watched it just the other day. They were seeing if you could make parachutes out of hotel curtains and survive after you jumped off out of the building.
Okay, spoil the episode for us. Can you make parachutes out of hotel curtains?
Yeah, 24 hotel shower curtains. How are you going to get 24 hotel shower curtains? It needs to be the stuff that's in a single room because it had to do with a guy escaping from prison or someplace like that.
Let's hope we never have to find out in practice,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but just one shower curtain doesn't work.
I'm curious about, so you're very focused on this conversation, on the people calling, and some of that I know is self-discipline and sort of over the years learning the rules for conversations.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you notice in this, I think of it as kind of a boring radio studio, what catches your attention in this room?
Well, I'm looking at a sign right now that says think, that's kind of a, you know, stands out from the wall. I'm seeing a globe over there where the oceans are black. That's kind of weird. Oops, we had in school had blue oceans. I'm just seeing I have a lot of normal stuff here, like dictionary and.
It, when you walked in, there's a TV monitor that actually is mounted over your head in case there's an emergency.
And I'm not looking at that,
right.
And I don't want to be looking at it. And it's playing a news program, and all the trailers going across by. That would have to be turned off, or I would have to. I can't be facing that. It's behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I could not have the distraction of that TV monitor running the news while I was trying to interview.
Right.
Absolutely not. I'd have to, my back's to it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's speak now with Walter in Houston. Hello, Walter.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I got a question about your seeing pictures. And I think you and I are kind of duplicate people because we've experienced almost the same thing. I loved your movie, by the way.
Well, thank you very much.
I work with autistic and attention deficit children. I'm actually up here on YouTube. My last name is Barker, B-A-R-K-E-R. But I got a question. Did you, in your book, Thinking in Pictures, do you ever use the phonic system that was developed by a 15-month to remember biblical numbers?
No, I had trouble learning to read. We had the horrid Dick and Jane books where you learn with the whole word. That did not work for me. So Mother just taught me how to sound out my words. She got me a book to read that's worth reading, like The Wizard of Oz, and had me sound out my words. And then she'd read more, less and less, and I would read more and more. There's other children that learn whole word, and you'll mess them up with phonics. So my approach to the reading thing is you try both, use the method that works, because the end result's important, getting the child to read.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Temple Grandin, autism advocate and professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. Let's go next to Susan in Austin. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. It's such an honor to speak with Temple. My question is, I have an 18-year-old son with Asperger's, so he's very high-functioning and, you know, just socially awkward. And I was wondering if, Temple, if you had any advice. He's very reluctant to read any books about autism, become part of any kind of group that works with kids on social, you know, behavior. Do you have any advice on how I might get him interested in that? Of course,
well, I want to get him employed. Is he working?
Has he ever
had a job?
Has he? No. And he's about to graduate from high school, and he wants a job.
Let's get a job this summer.
Yes.
Biggest problem I'm seeing, these kids are not getting jobs. And, you want to find somebody to employ him that will just work with him when he's socially awkward. When I started out on one of my very, very first projects, I criticized some welding, and I said it looked like a pigeon doo-dooed on it. And the engineer, the manager, pulled me into his office and just explained to me that that was a rude talk and that I had to apologize for that rude talk. Find somebody to work with him. What's he good at? We need to find a job for him.
Yeah, he wants to get a job at Barnes & Noble.
All right, get him a job at Barnes & Noble then. Make it work. Use your connections. All the years that I've been involved in designing, sell a job, design a job, supervises construction, and then start it up, you got to figure out how to get it done. Use your connections to find the door to get him into a bookstore.
What is the danger in pampering too much?
There's too much overprotection. I am seeing moms that can't let go. And I think their identity has gotten too tied up in being a special needs mom. I can think of one mom. She had a 13-year-old boy, smart kid. I talked to him. He had never gone in a store and just bought something and paid for it himself. That's just over-coddling and over-protection. I always say, don't chuck them in the deep end of the pool. But on the other hand, they've got to learn basic things like shopping. Now, he needs to get out and get a job. Let's see if we can get him a job at Barnes & Noble or some other bookstore.
How do you define happiness?
Well, I get happiness when someone tells me that, you know, one of my books helped their kid to go to college, or maybe a rancher liked one of my facilities. I get happiness seeing constructive stuff get done.
You have said that, if I'm correct about this, you wouldn't want to change your brain today.
I like the objective way that I think. I'm kind of horrified at just how emotional and chaotic some of the thinking is. I like the way I think. Autism is an important part of who I am. I don't want to not be autistic. But on the other hand, my identity is tied up in my career more than in the autism. And I'm seeing too many young kids where autism becomes their focus rather than career. I want to work on getting this kid a job. And I'll tell you right now, the kids in the pipeline now, when they're 11 years old, I want church jobs. I want walking dogs for the neighbors, volunteer jobs, instant legal. I want to put them into the workforce, not in the chaotic store at Christmas. I'm not going to do that. Some of the waitress and waiter jobs are way too chaotic. But teach them how to work. And all we got to do with your kid, let's see if we can get him into a bookstore. Just use your connections. Walk into a bookstore and say, oh, he's kind of shy. You don't have to say anything about autism, but he loves books. Can you just try them out?
Speaking of career, some people who get to be about your age start to think about retiring. You appear to be going stronger than ever.
Oh, I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I retired.
So you plan to just keep going?
Teaching. I'm going to keep doing that until I drop dead.
Temple Grandin, it has been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for coming in today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Temple Grandin is professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University. She's an advocate and spokesperson for people with autism. She is an author of multiple books. There are numerous titles, including Thinking in Pictures and The Autistic Brain. Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is our technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. We're on Facebook and Twitter at KERA Think. You can download the podcast on iTunes, or you can find it at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.